This summer's second set of programs, Modern Romance, begins with one of Beethoven's Opus 1 piano trios, which loudly proclaimed the arrival of an audacious new musical voice. From here, we embark on a journey through the Romantic era, music by Mendelssohn, Brahms, Dvorak, culminating in Dmitri Shostakovich's piano quintet, a work that reveals the embers of Romanticism burning unceasingly into the 20th century.
For his first published works, Beethoven chose a set of three piano trios. With over a dozen chamber works already under his belt, composed in Bonn and during his early days in Vienna, the publication of these trios as his Opus 1 represented a bold and deliberate decision. Beethoven's teacher, Joseph Haydn, had played a path-breaking role in the elevation of the piano trio genre from light salon music to chamber music of the highest sophistication. In choosing Haydn's signature medium to announce himself to the musical public, the notoriously headstrong Beethoven put audiences on notice that an important new musical voice was here to be reckoned with. The second trio of the Opus 1 set, the trio in G major, is the least frequently performed of the three, and consequently the least well-known, despite its sheer excellence. If the first trio, in E-flat major, is the most firmly situated in the realm of Haydn-esque classicism, and the C minor trio the most brazenly forward-looking, the trio in G major captures, like a time-lapse video of night turning into day, the metamorphosis of Beethoven's creative impulses towards the new path his music would soon pursue.
The trio begins with a luxurious adagio introduction. This hazy reverie is of structural importance, as the violin's opening melodic figure foreshadows the movement's first theme. Even once the music enters into its main allegro vivace section, this buoyant theme doesn't appear in full until several measures in. So long a runway does it need before taking flight. Beethoven's restless approach to thematic development is in evidence as the movement wends its way through a wide spectrum of expressive characters. This is a movement marked by its great breadth of musical materials. Though it has the trappings of the sonata form innovated by Haydn, it leaves us with the impression that the form was insufficient to contain Beethoven's imagination. Thank you. The movement concludes with a rich coda, continuing on past an emphatic cadence that would have made for a wholly satisfying conclusion, like the bonus of extra innings after 9 frames of riveting baseball. But the trio's centerpiece is the second movement, poetically marked Largo con Espressione. The 3 instruments synergistically share phrases, weaving a rich polyphonic texture that looks ahead to the most deeply felt chamber scores of the coming century. In one of music history's most poignant coincidences, the composer's close friend and colleague Ignaz Schuppanzigh was performing this movement in Vienna at the moment that, elsewhere in the city, Beethoven breathed his last. The scherzo movement, as genial as it is brief, bridges the profundity of the slow movement to the lighthearted finale. The ebullience of the main theme doesn't abate even for the movement's more cantabile moments. And drives the trio to its conclusion with a wide grin.
By the 1840s, Felix Mendelssohn, the greatest child prodigy that Western music had ever seen, had fulfilled the promise of his youth and reigned as one of Europe's supreme musical figures. In addition to being recognized as its leading composer, he was a celebrated pianist, organist, and conductor. In 1835, he fielded competing offers to become music director of the Munich Opera, editor of the music journal Allgemeine Musikalische Zeitung, and music director of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. He accepted the position in Leipzig, in which he contributed mightily to that city's musical life. Under his stewardship, the Gewandhaus Orchestra became one of the world's elite cultural institutions. 8 years into his tenure, Mendelssohn founded the Leipzig Conservatory, which would quickly attain similar distinction. Mendelssohn continued to have his pick of plum professional opportunities. In 1845, he received an invitation to conduct a festival in New York, and was offered a commission from the King of Prussia to compose incidental music to Aeschylus's Oresteia. Yet he declined both of these, opting to spend the first half of the year quietly with his family in Frankfurt. During this time, he composed two major chamber works, the Piano Trio in C minor, opus 66, and the String Quintet in B-flat major, opus 67. He also drafted a symphony, ultimately left unfinished, and worked on an edition of Bach's organ music.
Thus dating from the apex of Mendelssohn's professional renown, the B-flat quintet equally reveals a composer at the height of his creative powers. It is the composer's second and final string quintet, marking his return to a medium that he had last visited in 1826 with the quintet in A major, opus 18. That work is a product of Mendelssohn's remarkable adolescence. The previous year, at 16, he penned the magnificent Octet, opus 20, still regarded as one of the finest works in the canon. 4 months after the quintet, Mendelssohn completed his overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream, a work that likewise endures as a hallmark of its era. The quintet in B-flat provides a mature foil to the earlier quintet. It is, strictly speaking, a late work, though Mendelssohn certainly had no sense in 1845 that he would die at 38, 2 years later. Yet in character too, the quintet marks a significant departure from his opus 18. The earlier work, Mendelssohn's first essay in a form chiefly innovated by Mozart, reveals the 17-year-old composer, self-assured, certainly, yet nevertheless audibly following a Mozartian model. Its melodies carry the refined elegance of the classical era. Its ensemble textures are redolent of Mozart's string quintets. By contrast, the Opus 87 quintet demonstrates the voice of a romantic master in full bloom immediately from its opening gesture. Forte tremolandi in the lower four voices, buoying the heroic ascending theme in the first violin.
This piece is just classic Mendelssohn.
Violinist James Thompson.
I mean, it is so fiery and filled with this light, sort of effervescent energy. Just right out of the gate with the first movement, so much energy in life. Mendelssohn always has this texture of fast notes or 16th notes in the inner voices that's always sort of electrifying the music. Compared to his first quintet, which I think, you know, you can hear a little bit more of his predecessors in the classical era influencing that music. This one, I think, certainly looks forward towards the romantic era, particularly with the sort of the luscious melodies, especially in the second themes, which are often quite contrasting from the opening material. But it's always got this energy. And I think that's what sets Mendelssohn apart from his contemporaries and really kind of makes this music come alive.
This proceeds without repeat into the thrilling development section. Mm-hmm. and later a triumphant recapitulation, sustained throughout by melodic clarity, rhythmic vitality, and textural dynamism. The second movement serves as the quintet's scherzo, but eschews the hyper-caffeinated buzz of prototypical romantic scherzi. Instead, this movement, marked Andante Scherzando, projects a measured temperament.
When you think Mendelssohn scherzo, you have to think of the Midsummer Night's Dream scherzo, which is the bane of all of the violinists' existence in the conservatory, just madly practicing for the orchestra audition. It's a favorite excerpt for everyone because it requires so much control. And this scherzo is the same sort of idea. Mendelssohn loves these triple meter scherzos. This one's in 6/8. It's not quite as fast, not quite as fast as some of his other scherzos. It's not blistering, but it has that lightness and particularly the poise with, I think, a lot of the short notes. He writes just such charming music, I think. Mendelssohn always should sound effortless and just sort of whisked away on the wind. And this scherzo, despite the sort of moderate tempo marking, I think it's so light.
Fanny Mendelssohn's description of the octet's scherzo, for which she claimed her brother drew inspiration from the Walpurgis Nachtstraum in Goethe's Faust, applies equally well here. Quote, "Everything new and strange, and at the same time most insinuating and pleasing, one feels near the world of spirits, carried away in the air, half inclined to snatch up a broomstick and follow the aerial procession." End quote. The deeply felt adagio e lento counters the esprit of the first two movements with a sober melancholy. All five voices issue the lachrymose, dirge-like theme. From this solemn opening, the movement's pathos steadily intensifies to full-throated despair. This despair, at its height of anguish, gives way to music of profound and spiritual beauty. The quintet's Allegro Molto Vivace Finale revisits the opening movement's vigor. Though carefree in character, the melody is muscular in texture. No sooner has the theme been stated than the tremolandi of the quintet's opening return. As one irresistible musical idea after another comes to the fore, Mendelssohn's expert deployment of the ensemble's five voices continues to thrill the ear. A central episode, marked by intricate counterpoint, reflects the composer's fascination with Bach. Yet, in its melodic sensibility and expressive zeal, this soaring finale is unmistakably the work of a singular romantic master.
Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Musical examples appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Brahms' Liebeslieder waltzes for four-hand piano, Opus 52A, performed by Fiametta Tarli and Ivo Varbanov, appears courtesy of Independent Creative Music and Sound Records. Beethoven's Piano Trio in G Major, Opus 1, No. 2, performed by Anne-Marie McDermott, Chol Yang Lin, and Fred Sherry, appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Mendelssohn's String Quintet in A Major, Opus 18, performed by Scott St. John, Jeff Nuttall, Leslie Robertson, Masumi Pararostad, and Brandon Vamos, and String Quintet in B-flat Major, Opus 87, performed by Ian Swenson, Georgia Frizanis, Cynthia Phelps, Geraldine Walter, and David Finkel, are available on Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes are a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.